Hello, everyone. This is Sparkle On with Davey Jags. Sparkle is your happiness, passion, and self-worth, and nothing can dull your light. Today, I'm excited to have Brandon Seho, the founder and podcast host of The Mental Game, where you interview athletes, musicians, and entertainers, and you are literally taking the internet by storm. And the reason I wanted to have you on, also aside from you breaking the stigma of mental health, is because you're a Cincinnati kid, like I was.
Yeah, so you went to Xavier, I went to Cincinnati, so there's a little rivalry there. But No, I mean, it's so cool. Thank you for having me on. I just moved to LA like 3 weeks ago. It has been kind of a wake-up call, but in a good way. It's been really cool so far.
Why has it been a wake-up call?
Just like, not in a bad way. It's just been really... like I wake up and I realize, oh, I'm like 10 minutes from Hollywood. Anyone can come in anytime and do an episode at our studio. It's just been really, really cool. I've always come back and forth between Cincinnati, New York, and LA. And now that I'm here, somebody might be sick or have a show pop up. Guess what? They can come the next day and we can still shoot the episode. So it's just really cool being at the center of everything.
Yeah. And so you actually come from the sports reporting world.
Yeah.
And so what initially sparked this thing to start this podcast and go off on your own?
Well, I went through like my own mental health struggles like we all do. You know, my first suicidal thought happened when I was 14 years old, and we didn't talk about it our whole life, whether we were in elementary school, high school, college. I mean, I don't think I knew what mental health was until I was like maybe 26 years old, the first time I went to therapy. And so, I hit a rock bottom where I lost 3 family members in 3 months, woman that I thought I was going to marry. We were going through a really toxic breakup and a lot of pressure on me at work. And so I just was suicidal every day for 3 or 4 months. And I realized I needed help. And so long story short, checked into a hospital, started getting the help that I needed. And I realized, oh, this stuff's not that hard to understand. We're just not taught it. And I looked around and didn't see a space where the NFL players that I worked with or were friends with could go and tell their story, or celebrities or whoever. And I was like, okay, what if I start something? I never would have imagined less than 2 years later, I'd be living in LA interviewing the type of people that I've had on. But it's my dream as a kid was always to host a Tonight Show. And so those are crazy big dreams, but I feel like I'm kind of doing it my own way with my own purpose, if that makes sense.
Yeah. And I mean, you've had amazing guests. You've had Terry Crews, Kevin Gates, Kate Flannery. Like, well, what's in store for the future episodes, honestly?
I mean, I hope we just keep building it into becoming a safer place for people to keep telling their stories. You know, it's I don't really care about me getting like big or growing or famous or anything like that, but the bigger people we have on, the Taylor Swifts, the Travis Kelce's, the Justin Bieber's, like you're smiling at me, and people when I speak at events like kind of laugh sometimes too. It's like, look, I've reached out to all of them and I got a no so far, but like at least I know how to get to them.
Oh, I'm smiling because I'm just wondering if you're a Swiftie.
Oh yeah, I definitely am. Now what's like the hard part about the stuff with her and Travis dating right now, which like I'm very, very happy for them. But Travis went to the University of Cincinnati. We were there at the same time. We probably have 30 mutual friends we have never met, but like my timeline to like ask him to come on the show was like this off season. And then him and Taylor started dating. I'm like, there's no way this is going to happen right now. But for me, I just want to keep having bigger and better guests on, because that means we're going to keep growing it and growing it. I mean, you mentioned like Terry Crews. That was something I didn't even think was possible. He just saw an episode on Instagram and commented on it. And so
that's awesome.
Yeah. Moments like that, you go, oh, this is really genuine, because people, when they sit down, just like when they do with you, they just want to tell their story and feel heard and seen and try to help anyone they can, which is the whole mission of the show.
Yeah. And I feel like a lot of people also, a lot of the narrative is that social media is so bad for our mental health. But I think like your show and just the influencing world in general, it has the power to do good. So what have you seen on social media, how that's actually helped break the stigma for mental health?
Yeah, I mean, before I started posting any of my stuff, I would see people tell their story. I you know, there was a Washington State quarterback in 2018 that took his own life. And it was the first time I'd ever like heard of an athlete dying by suicide. And I saw the story of Tyler and I go, oh, that's like how I feel. And so it was before I even thought about any of this, but just seeing that, it kind of helped me maybe start thinking about getting help. And then once, you know, the Mental Game was born and I started posting this stuff and seeing how it could help people, or reading the emails or the DMs, or seeing them, you know, at these live events I would do, come up to me and go, hey, that episode with Kevin, like that was crazy. I had the same story as him, or this and that. That's when I realized like, the more we talk, the more we tell our stories, the more we can help each other. And so that's been my favorite part. Like, obviously, I love sitting down with the NFL players, the movie stars, and musicians having those conversations. Mm-hmm. But my favorite thing that happens, and it's sad, but it has a happy ending because they're coming forward and showing that the mental game is working, is like every single event that I do, whether it's a high school, college, nonprofit, you know, recovery center, mm-hmm. every single time, at least one person, usually it's more than one, comes up to me and says, hey, man, like, I'm never 21 this, but like, I'm suicidal right now. I don't know where to go, what to do. Like, that's so heartbreaking to hear that it happens. But that means that the platform that we're building and the conversation, the safe space we're creating is working. And so, you know, my manager, EJ, does a really good job making sure we have therapists, nonprofits for mental health and resources at every single event so we can help that person go forward and on their mental health journey. But for me, that's the favorite thing, is seeing it like actually help people in person.
Yeah. And I mean, you've done two big tours now, and one of them you traveled to 30 states in 30 days. That's insane.
It was insane. I had no plan. I just like thought.
You had no plan?
No, I had no plan. I go, I wonder if anyone's ever done this before. I think people have done long road trips, but right. I just put on Instagram like, hey, I'm going to do this. Here are the dates. I'm going to be in each city and state. And we filled about half of them up just by people on Instagram reaching out, emailing EJ and myself. And then we had to like recruit like colleges and different, you know, event centers. And it was fun. It was so cool. Like, it was everything from 20 people at a recovery center in Detroit all the way up to thousands of people in an arena at LSU. Like, I had no idea what to expect. I drove every single mile in my Jeep Cherokee. It was a long 30 days, but it was so rewarding. And like the things I just talked about, mm-hmm. getting to have those conversations in person and see how it can help people that might not ever think about mental health unless they see their favorite athlete talking about it. That was the coolest thing for me. So I want to do that somehow again, not 30 states in 30 days, but I would love to tour the country again and be able to help more people.
What was the most profound lesson that came out of that tour? Whether it was a story or like resources that you didn't know about that existed?
Yeah, I think the thing that touched me the most, I'll give two stories. One was, there was a girl I went to West Virginia University for a semester and a half. Because I failed out and was a drunk frat boy, and then came back to Cincinnati and finished my degree there for media. But so going back there, like the third day of the tour was really, really cool and special. And we were in like this small theater, and I tell my story, show stuff from the podcast, but then ask people if they have any questions. And a lot of times they ask mental health questions, and then it turns into them telling their story. And when you're doing a presentation, you can kind of see who's feeling it, who's
right.
Maybe digging it or a little bit more emotionally invested. And this girl in the back, she was the first person to ask the question. She started tearing up immediately. And she goes, your story, the reason why I came today was like my journalism teacher, a professor taught you when you were here. He said, I should benefit from coming to this. I just lost my brother to suicide. He was going through a really, really tough time, relationship, a lot of pressure on job. Like she was describing my life. And she goes, I just saw his story in yours, and I wanted to know what I can do to help anyone in my family so they never get there. And so like that, I don't tear up or cry very often when I'm talking to people. Did that in front of the whole place. And then afterwards we spent about a half hour talking. And so moments like that are like why it's really, really powerful, because she had never really talked about that. She hadn't gone to therapy before. So we had West Virginia University's psychology department there where they offer free therapy. So anyone listening in college, 99% of universities in your tuition fees, therapy is included as part of that.
Yeah.
And as we know, as adults outside in the real world, it is very expensive sometimes when it comes to mental health. But getting to see her go to therapy for the first time, and you can't check in with everyone, but like I made sure I had a Zoom call with her after to kind of see how she was doing. So that was one. And then two was like, you know, either being at home or being in Louisiana for the two shows there, because those are the places where I struggled the most with the suicidal thoughts, with, you know, people would see me on the sidelines for an LSU game or a Bengals game and see that everything's fine, but really it wasn't. And so getting to walk into an arena with thousands of people at LSU and have Joe Burrow's parents there and former LSU football players that are playing the NFL, or Ashley Natt, who is one of the best gymnasts ever, you know, in LSU history, like Kevin Falk, who played for the Patriots, won 3 Super Bowls with Tom Brady, like said in front of the whole crowd, he goes, if Brandon would have texted me, you know, 5 years ago and asked me to do this, I wouldn't be here. None of you would be here. And so to see that like the stigma is changing, and it's not like I'm doing it, but like the fact that people are comfortable talking about it just really made it the perfect storm for me to kind of take the jump with this.
Yeah, no, I think definitely more athletes are speaking out more than ever. And I think the mental health crisis that is impacting specifically athletes is mm-hmm. is something that really needs to be talked about. I mean, back in 2021, coming out of the pandemic, we saw 5 NCAA women athletes die by suicide. Mm-hmm. And I've been really impacted by specifically the story of Katie Meyer from
yep.
Stanford Soccer. And for the listeners that don't know, she suddenly and tragically died by suicide after she received an email that was essentially questioning if she was going to stay a student on campus. Katie was diehard Stanford. She was going to go to their law school. She was a national champion. She was mm-hmm. an All-American. She was their goalie. And that story was essentially one of her teammates was sexually assaulted allegedly by another student athlete. And Katie spilled coffee on the guy. And it was a question if she did it on purpose or not. And so the school was handling that as essentially violation of behavior in the handbook. Mm. And I think as a student athlete, as at Xavier, and knowing how small a college campus can feel, and when you start to hear about certain things, especially in the athlete bubble, it's very, very overwhelming.
Mm-hmm.
And I know, like, Kate Fagan, who's also an advocate and journalist in this space, she came to our school. And one of the things when I was a kid, I told her, I said, this has been happening at our school. You know, I left this like cross country and track team because I feel like I can't be a part of this athletic program. I can't represent this university in this way. And actually, after she came and spoke with us, I had a mental breakdown and I was hospitalized too in Cincinnati. And I think part of the reason I resonate with you is so much, but also from the athlete side, is because I know now looking back, it was kind of like this suppression of voice.
Yeah.
And with Katie's story, I don't know her. I don't even know the family. I know what it's like to be that girl in the dorm room and feel like what I say doesn't matter.
Mm-hmm.
And so what would be your advice, especially since you're going and talking with these kids? I mean, there is something in young minds where it's mm-hmm. like you just don't know how to vocalize these emotions. But if they're really struggling, what do you tell them?
Yeah. For me, I tell people two things with mental health. Number one, do something. If you're feeling that anxiety, those suicidal thoughts, the depression, the anger, whatever you're feeling, like, you can't hold it in. You have to do something about it, whether it's talking to a trusted adult, mom, dad, coach, teammate, friend, counselor at school. Like, you have to get that out, because when you bottle it up, it makes it a million times worse.
Mm-hmm.
And number two is like the biggest thing that's helped me with my mental health, and that's knowing that feelings are temporary. Mm-hmm. It feels like in those moments that you're never going to get out of this and it's the end of the world. You know, for me, I just remember one of the most traumatic things when I was 14 was that I had a nude photo sent around. And
Jeez.
That was the first time I thought about suicide. Like, this girl probably sent me, when we were freshmen in high school, a bunch, and I sent her one, and I never told anyone, said anything. And I never forget being in the front row at a football game and seeing everyone go to their phones. And like, this was before Snapchat and TikTok. This is like, so it'd been 2007. And so like, we had just got cell phones. Like, I didn't know what I was doing. I was a kid. Mm-hmm. And so I thought it was the end of the world in that moment. But like, I eventually was able to, you know, it took me 15 years to ask for help, which is embarrassing. But I tell that story because as soon as I realized I could ask for help and that those feelings were temporary, it wasn't the end of the world, or 2 years ago when I was suicidal as an adult, that it wasn't the end of the world, it helped me kind of move forward. And so what I would tell kids or anyone struggling is like, don't be afraid to talk about it and go to somebody. And even if someone doesn't understand right away or doesn't want to help you right away, if people truly love and care about you, they will help you. You know, my dad 2 years ago told me tough shit, suck it up, when I was telling him on the phone that I wanted to kill myself. My dad is one of my best friends. He just had never been around someone that was struggling that bad and right. Didn't know what to say. He said the wrong thing. But as I said, if people love and care about you, they will help you. And so within an hour, he called back, apologized, and we started working with my mom together to get me into a hospital in Cincinnati. And so just knowing that it's not the end of the world, like, it takes work, but you have to ask for help. We cannot do it alone. It is impossible to do it alone.
And then where do you think like a school's responsibility comes in?
Yeah, it's tough because like with anything that's happening in society, like the schools are handed that responsibility, but there's not any more resources to help them in most cases. Mm-hmm. And so for me, well, one thing I'll say is like doing that tour around the country, I saw so many different high schools and colleges and groups of students. And we can talk about what's Gen Z or below that, like the younger kids that are always on Snapchat, TikTok, whatever, that we make fun of them for being on their phones way too much. You can make fun of them, sure. But as being someone that's talked to these fourth, fifth, sixth, seventh, eighth graders through high school on this tour, they are talking about mental health more than anyone in the world. Yeah. And are more open and vulnerable. I mean, I'd have events where I had one where like a third grader talked about losing her brother, then a fourth grader talked about losing his grandpa. And in the middle of this presentation, a third and a fourth grader are giving each other healthy coping mechanisms. It's
That's
like
amazing.
Yeah, when you and I were in school, there's no fucking way. Can I cuss? Sorry.
No, I don't care.
Okay. There's no way that would have happened. And so that's been really, really powerful. I will give credit to schools. Like there's amazing things that they're doing. There's mm-hmm. mental health clubs, organizations at a lot of high schools and colleges now. You know, one I've worked with a lot is the Hope Squad, where it's student-based, it's peer-to-peer outreach and support, where they just learn how to help their classmates, how to help themselves, and they're voted on by their peers to kind of be that Hope Squad member. We're working on something now with the Mental Game to be able to help students, where we kind of take the podcast and make that kind of into a curriculum-ish. We're not 100% on that yet, so I don't want to say too much, but like that's something that we want to take like the presentation that I do in schools and make it a year-long thing where these kids can help each other and learn how to take care of their mental health, because like I said, that need is there. And unfortunately, there's not always a ton of resources. You know, I'm so happy that there are social workers and therapists and counselors in schools. Like, I didn't know about any of that when I was in school. Mm-hmm. But, you know, in some of these schools I go to, there's 1,000 kids and there's like 3 counselors.
Yeah.
The workload. And that's just, you know, generally in mental health as a whole. Like, there's such a big need because I think obviously during the pandemic, people felt alone and struggled with their mental health, but in school specifically. But, you know, what they're doing is they are making it more acceptable to talk about. And again, you can blame the kids for being on their phones too much, but they're the ones that are talking about and wanting to learn and help each other with mental health more than anyone else in the world.
I mean, Gen Z is going to change the world.
Are you Gen Z?
I don't know.
How old are you? Can I ask that?
I'm 27.
Oh, no, I don't think so. No, I'm about to be 31.
Well, yeah,
closer to me,
it's
I think.
Some things I read, it's like they say I'm a millennial and then it's like they say I'm Gen Z. So I really just like...
So you're
I'm on the cusp.
Yeah, you're not a 90s kid then because you didn't really
96.
Remember.
96.
Yeah, I guess you could consider that.
Yeah.
Did you watch the Rugrats or... I'm getting off the rails
the
now.
Rugrats.
Okay.
I mean, no, I mean, like, it's so funny because my parents always wanted me to play outside. And so like, just would not get Disney Channel, like, would not get Nickelodeon. So I would watch it at friend's house. But, like, the main thing that I loved was, like, Lizzie McGuire. I mean, I love Hilary Duff. I love Lizzie McGuire. I will be still singing What Dreams Are Made Of at some point on this podcast.
Sorry, I got us off the rails. I just think about you talking about, like, being forced to play outside, your parents wanting you to play outside. Like, I remember, like, obviously I love having a cell phone and being connected. But yeah. It is crazy to think that there was a time where I called somebody on their house phone, asked their parents to talk to, you know, my friend, and then rode my bike to his house. There was no communication with my parents until the next morning when I woke up at home. Like, it was such a different world.
Well, I think it is a good point for what we're talking about is, like, social media allows people to connect. It allows kids to connect in different ways and, you know, keep relationships across the world.
Yeah.
But I also believe that shaking someone's hand is never going to go out of style. Mm, like,
I like that.
What do you think, like, kids can do now to, because it doesn't come as like second nature to call someone.
Yeah.
Even. So it's like, especially when we're talking about mental health, it's like, how do you sometimes just pick up the phone and see how you're doing?
Yeah. I mean, that's the thing, is you have to make time for that and prioritize it. Like, you can send a text message or scroll on TikTok and that might help you a little bit, or it might just be what you're used to. Mm-hmm. But for me, like, I'm so much better in person. Like, yeah, this podcast probably could have been pretty good if we did it on Zoom, but it's way better in person because we get to meet, get to know each other, talk about things like more intimately. And so for me, that's how I feel about really life or mental health, is that you have to have those experiences. It can't just be all online. I'm the type of person that I'll just randomly like FaceTime my friends and like check in on them. I just think, I also am like just a weird dude and have like just some funny energy. So like I'll say something inappropriate and FaceTime them real quick and like just have some fun. But like, you have to have that person to person genuine like connection. I think it can't just be all texting, what you see on Instagram, what you're posting. I don't have Snapchat anymore, but like what you post on Snapchat, you have to have that interpersonal, am I saying that right? Interpersonal connection. Like, that's super important, I think, for everyone.
And I think, well, you do a really great job of it. I mean, it was your profession for so many years, and it still is. But I love what you're doing. Like, you're setting up in random places, and you kind of, like, the other day you were up at the Hollywood sign, and you put, "Have you ever feel alone?" on a chair and talking to strangers. So how are you, like, what is it a skill set to connect with these strangers, or you kind of just do it?
I mean, I think it's a mix of both. You know, I've made it kind of my job to talk about my mental health story. So I think, and like the old job of being a sports reporter or a storyteller, like, that's what I've done my whole life. And so it's very awkward at first when you just set it up and you're waiting for people to like ask you, or like, "Hey, where are you from?" "Oh, Germany, Canada," like, and "Oh, Michigan," like, and just try to do small talk. And they ask, "What's that?" And I just give them my 30-second pitch on like who I am, what I do. And most people want to sit down and talk. And I never would have imagined when I do stuff like this, like I did it in Times Square. I've done it on Hollywood Boulevard, you know, on the Walk of Fame. I just did it, like you said, at the Hollywood sign. I mean, we had a guy that lost his son. And after that was suicide, like he himself was suicidal. Somebody lost his wife to suicide, where his son afterwards wrote a play that is now being performed here in LA about his mother's passing. And we had like two or three more other stories of people going through this really deep, dark stuff, but they offered to talk about it because they, you know, thought it could help other people that might be listening. And so like, that's another one of my favorite things to do, is because you can sit down and do an interview and you might know a lot of what you're going to hear with the celebrities or the athletes, and they give me great stories that helps the masses. But sometimes when you're just sitting there with a stranger and they tell you the most intimate details about their life, and they just met you 30 seconds ago, that shows that they really trust you with their story and they want to help other people. And that is such a cool thing for me. So I don't know if it's going to be a weekly thing because it's a lot of work, but I really do want to go. I thought like maybe like the sign at the Hollywood sign, like, and people would like, I don't know, maybe after doing it for a couple of months, people that would go there would start to be like, "Oh, I thought I saw this on TikTok," or something like that. I just want to create a safe space in general with the mental game, but I think that might be a really cool way to do it in person too.
I think so too. I think, you know, I'm all about like wanting to interview athletes and, you know, influencers and things like that. I think it's important for reaching people, but it's sometimes those people's lives are not relatable all the time, and it's nothing against them. It's just, you know, I love being able to stumble into a coffee shop and just learn someone's story. Because I mean, one, that's friendship.
Yeah.
and two, it's just peer to peer. So a mix of it is really good. And then one of the things I wanted to ask you about, and I know you're pretty vocal about this too, is like how getting sober helped your mental health.
Yeah.
Do you want to speak about that?
Yeah. I mean, it's been a game changer. It's, today's like June 21st, I think. So I'm about to hit February 4th the year. So I'm bad at math. Is that like almost 15 months?
It's still a huge accomplishment.
Yeah.
Congratulations.
Thanks. Yeah, no, it's crazy. It's a complete game changer. You know, I would lie if I said I didn't struggle sometimes. I mean, it's a very weird thing at first. And I failed a lot at first when I tried to quit, because I was, just to put in perspective, and I'm not saying this is like a brag partier dude, but like, just, I would probably go out 5 nights a week. And while, you know, you or somebody else might be able to, you know, go to a trivia night one night and go play cornhole one night or go to a movie one night, maybe have a drink here and there, like for me, it was like very, very drunk, almost blackout, if not blackout, lots of liquor and other things came up too. It's like, I just did that for like 8 years. And what I was doing was numbing the pain of the stuff that I was struggling with my whole life, this feeling of being alone and searching for the perfect relationship or job or just trying to feel happy. I mean, I didn't feel happy until like a year and a half ago, which is crazy to think about. But yeah, it's been a total game changer for me. It allows me to like be present and live in the moment. Like I might be tired, but at least I'm not hungover anymore.
Yeah.
You know, my job before, it was so cool. It was awesome to be on the sidelines and, you know, the NFL or, you know, in the dugout for Major League Baseball and get to interview these superstars. But the downside of it was that the schedule, like if you watch the news or you watch SportsCenter, you're watching till midnight. So that means I'm working till midnight every single weekend. And so I would get off late and then go out and try to make up, you know, and catch up to people who were already out drinking, partying. It just, I had a lot of fun, sure, but I just, it didn't help my mental health. You know, alcohol is a depressant. It literally makes you more depressed. Mm-hmm. So for me, it was just, yeah, realizing that. And after I got to, and I probably failed like 3 or 4 times. And then once I got to like the 2 or 3 week mark, I'm like, all right, I can do it. One of my best friend's weddings was in Kansas City 2 weeks after I stopped drinking. And that was like the hardest test ever. But now, like, I don't think I'll ever drink again.
Yeah.
And it's just not like, I'm not dogging people that do. I just know I can't handle it. And that's why, like, I struggle sleeping now. And so people are like, well, why don't you get a pen and smoke and like, it'll help you go to bed. And I'm like, cause that might work for you. But for me, like, I'll get bored on a Tuesday or be pissed off about something. And then I'll smoke and then I'll do something else and then I'll drink or I'll dig it. And so I'm just not willing to, the risk reward for me isn't there anymore. Like, and that's the cool thing with getting sober or going to therapy. Once you see it work, then you go, oh shit, like this is so, so worth it. Like, I don't miss it at all. You know, I'll drink like non-alcoholic beer if I'm having a tough day now, or it's just hot, or like I go boating a lot. So like everyone's partying, drinking, boating. And then I can drive home, which is fun too. I don't have to Uber anymore. It's great.
I love the non-alcoholic beer. We have my family and I have a brewery back home in Pennsylvania.
Wait, what?
Yeah.
Oh, I didn't know that.
I was running that while I was doing my master's.
Oh, wow.
Cincinnati has a big craft beer culture.
Yeah, for sure.
And part of my first business pitch competition for Sparkle actually was at Madtree.
Oh, nice.
And part of like our category management class was studying the craft beer market. It was always like a big part of me growing up, which kind of sounds a little weird.
It was a big part of me growing up too, except I was drinking at like 12. So that was not good. Sorry.
No, it's fine. That's actually one of the reasons I felt like I did want to move out here and stay out here is because I loved the brewery. I still love it. But I was drinking a lot. And I think our environment, I know in Cincinnati, I mean, I can't run for president because of the Snapchats from college. Right? So
I don't know, man. Something's being
let's not go there.
All right, sorry.
But
I'm not a political guy. I have some jokes. That's the problem with being the mental health guy. You can't really make jokes anymore because you're trying to help people with their mental health. So sorry.
But yeah, out here, you can get non-alcoholic beer, non-alcoholic wine. I've been doing non-alcohol rosé.
Oh, okay.
And then they have all these mocktails everywhere.
Yeah.
And so LA has a different culture and community than when I was in Cincy and New York. And now I'm at the brewery, we're trying to do the non-alcoholic beer. The equipment's very expensive.
That's what I've realized. Cause I go like, why would I buy a non-alcoholic beer? Is it the same price as but the investment is the same, if not more. And that's been kind of the crazy thing. The sober, I mean, I love it. It's even if you mentioned like how the environment maybe in Cincinnati or New York is not the same as LA, and I've only been here for 3 weeks, so I don't really know that well. But what I realized when I got sober is that one, way more people are sober than you think.
Yep.
And two, kind of going back to the mental health part of this, if people love and care about you and respect you, they won't treat you any different. This sounds crazy, but the same bars and clubs I would go to where as soon as I would walk in, there'd be a Coors Light and a shot of Jameson waiting for me. Now there's, they know I like blue Powerade or lemonade. Aww. Like, so it really did. And maybe my story's a little bit different because it was like on the internet.
Yeah.
So it maybe helped a little bit. But what was really cool was people being very, very accepting. And that is like, that's so powerful. No matter what you go through, is if you have people around you that accept you for who you are, support your decisions that are healthy, it can really help you move forward. But that's so cool. I didn't know you guys owned a brewery.
Yeah. So I'll let you.
What's it called?
It was Chatty Monks, and now it's called Pagoda City Brewing.
Okay, cool.
Because we have the Pagoda in Reading. And
nice. So you guys brewing NA beer yet or working on
it? We're working on it. Well, we're actually working on a formulation that we wouldn't need the 100K equipment.
Oh, okay, nice.
Yeah, so my father, he comes from a manufacturing background, and so they've been playing, but I gotta get my non-alcohol rosé because I have a beer, Hey Bay Rosé. It's better than Bubbles at Rheingeist.
Okay,
but it was inspired by that.
All right, nice. Wait, you made your own?
I worked with the brewer to make it. That's so it's called cool. Hey Bay Rosé.
That's awesome. That's a great name too.
Thanks.
So how's it? Is it spelled like Hey Bay Rosé all together?
No, it's like it's separate words.
Oh, okay. Yeah. That's sick though. That's awesome.
We're gonna have a non-alcohol version.
Well, however I can taste test or try it out, I would love to.
Yeah, for sure. Because I've been drinking a lot less since I moved here, and I think like what would be your advice, I guess, for having a community that possibly does drink a lot, right? How were you able to get sober?
You know, I never went to AA, which is like something that I want to do out here because I hear about it a lot from people that, you know, listen to my podcast or talk to me in person. And I really want to try it. I know it can help people amazingly. And I would love to try it. Mm-hmm. I just kind of had the discipline one day. I woke up, I said, fuck, man, I can't keep doing this.
Yeah.
And so I took myself out of a lot of environments, which not at first. At first, I would start going back in them. And I realized that it just didn't feel the same. It was kind of awkward. But for me, it just got to a point where instead of being there, you know, for 5 hours until 3 a.m, gambling at the bar and passing out and all this shit that I used to do, it was like, hey, I can still go say hey to my friends, be there for an hour, and then be in bed and be up at 8 a.m. the next day to go on a walk and start working on a Saturday or Sunday. And
that horseshoe casino I'll get you every time.
What'd you say?
The horseshoe.
Oh, yeah, the horseshoe. Or, I mean, I guess, well, you can figure out ways around that. You don't have to go to the casino. No. But, yeah, no, I've had some nights there, too. It's, it's just been cool to see people accept it. Like, my boys, like, my best friends, we've been in a group chat since we were, like, 16. Mm-hmm. They still party and get super drunk and go to the games and stuff. And, like, they just respect and know that I'm not going to.
Yeah.
And, like, they'll get some NA beer from me or like, you know, I'll offer to drive because I don't really care, but maybe they'll buy my tickets to the game or something like that. It's just, it doesn't affect my friendship. And what's so crazy is I used to be the guy on the other side. When someone said they're not drinking right now or they don't drink, I'd be like, why not? What's up? Are you not fun? Like, why don't you want to? Like everyone else is, like, you should get fucked up, like all this stuff. And it's so crazy to like be on the other side of that. But I just realized like I can't handle it. And like, I know California sober is a thing too. Like,
yeah.
Like I said, I can't do anything else because it'll lead to something else. Like,
right.
I just don't trust myself. I'm not willing to take that risk. But if you're around people, again, that love and care about you, they'll accept you for who you are. And if they don't, then fuck them. Go find new friends. If they can't respect you for what you want to be or who you want to be, then they shouldn't be in your circle anyway.
No, that's a big thing that I feel like I've had to learn, like, even in, like, the post years from college. It's like, you know, you're kind of put in an environment all together. It's like, I mean, college is like a crazy concept.
It's wild.
Right? Yeah. Like sometimes
it's a waste of money in some regards. Sorry. I love my degree from the University of Cincinnati, but you do spend a lot of money on classes. You don't.
Yeah, no, I mean, it's important to question because especially, you know, half the time you learn by doing, right?
Yeah.
But the building community is so important for, you know, one of the things I like to say on this podcast is passion equals purpose and purpose equals change. Mm. And when you are losing sight of that purpose or you have a community that doesn't support even going after that purpose, it's hard to affect change, right?
Yeah.
And you're doing that with the podcast and even with your story. And so I want to know what your sparkle is, that happiness, passion, and self-worth.
What like makes me go, I guess.
Yeah.
What makes me sparkle? Is that what I'm supposed to say?
Yeah.
I think it really is just seeing that I have found like a new purpose that, you know, it's not like I moved to LA because I make a shit ton of money and am rich from doing a podcast. No, I quit my like full-time job. I was driving Uber, that people would recognize me driving for like 6 months. It was so embarrassing and I hated it, but like,
that's not embarrassing. That's awesome.
When I started talking to like Bryce Vine did the same thing when he was coming up in music out here. And so once him and I started talking about it, I'm like, okay, I don't feel as bad now. But like, it was weird at first because I literally would be like on Instagram sitting down with someone famous. And then the next day I'd be driving Uber. And it was like such a weird thing for me, self-esteem wise, but I learned to appreciate it because the people that would get in that would recognize me, it would turn into them like what we're doing now to start telling their story on the ride. It was really, I wish I could record it. That's against Uber policy.
Right, right.
But like, I would have loved to create a show like that where it's just ride sharing and telling people hearing people's stories. So to answer your question, I think finding my new purpose, that has been the biggest win moment sparkle of my life. Like it is just, it's changed my life. It saved my life. It's, like I said, I'm not making a ton of money doing this. I don't have that security blanket, but I'm the happiest I've ever been, and I have the least. And that's sounds corny, but it's true. Like, I hope one day that the mental game is on ESPN or Netflix, and I don't think that's out of the realm of possibilities. Like, I truly believe that that will happen. But no matter what, just having that purpose, that goal to help people and like save lives and be able to hear how, you know, how your story can help people. I get DMs all the time and you know, meet people in person. Like, when I was driving Uber, I'll never forget, this guy got in the back with his friend, and they're like, it would either happen in the beginning or somewhere through. Like, you see people on their phones looking at a photo. You're on your Instagram trying to figure it out because it was a fun game to play. And this kid goes like, hey, man, like, your letter really helped me. I'm like, oh, thanks, dude. That means a lot. Like, I was kind of nervous posting it. And like, he started reciting my goodbye letter that I wrote to my mom and ex that I don't even remember all the fucking words to me at like 2 a.m. as I'm driving him home as an Uber driver. It was one of the... like,
wow.
Yeah, it was one of the like craziest experiences. But then I realized like that maybe it helped. I mean, he told me that it helped him and he felt the same way as me. And I'm like, you just never know what situations are going to pop up. And so moments like that, or like, probably it's weird saying my favorite because these are like heartbreaking situations that you hear about. But the one that touched me the most was I get DMs and I don't always see them, but I saw this one where this guy goes, hey man, I don't normally send these, but I had to tell you, like, I been really struggling. I kissed my wife goodbye without her knowing. Same thing with my daughter. And I got in my car to take my own life. And I put YouTube on, played music like I normally do. And somehow your podcast like got suggested, and I saw it was like sports.
Oh, I just got chills.
Yeah. And so I saw it was like sports and mental health. So I listened to it. And then I listened to another one. And I listened to another one. And before I knew it, like, I turned around and went back home. And I just wanted to thank you for like helping me start go to therapy because of that, like the YouTube suggestion. I'm like, again, I don't get emotional very often with this stuff, but like, just cause I've told my story so much and lived it, but hearing stuff like that, that is the purpose that like I want to, that I feel like I have now, is to be able to help people like that. And so that's the coolest thing for me. Like I said, one day I want to have Taylor Swift or Justin Bieber or, you know, President Obama on. I think that'll be amazing. But it'll only be amazing because it'll be able to help even more people, like the two I just talked about.
Wow. And I mean, I've had some of my most transformative messages from Uber rides. So, and I want you to know that everyone in LA does what you did.
Oh, okay.
They're cool. Producing, they're Ubering. Like, you are in the community that you need to be in.
All right.
Well, this town is going to feel as small as Cincinnati in 2 years. I promise you.
All right. I'll take your word for
it. And just know that this is like literally part of your purpose.
Well, thank you. Yeah, I did. Yeah. Well, it was funny. I did a speaking engagement at the, for the gala for this mental health hospital I was at in Cincinnati like 2 months ago. Mm-hmm. And again, your audience can always ask questions about mental health. And I told the Uber story to one question. The next question, the guy stands up, he goes, hey, by the way, you drove me an Uber. And like the whole place just starts laughing. And it was just cool to see it come full circle because like you just meet so many people, you don't remember everyone.
Yeah.
But then he like brought up a part of the conversation and it went right back in my mind. So yeah, that was cool. But like I said, yeah, Bryce Vine talked about it and he would like play his music for people. It's just cool hearing stuff like that. So thank you. That means a lot.
Yeah. And we're definitely getting Taylor Swift on our podcast. One, she went to my high school, so I'm very determined.
Wait, really?
Yeah.
Oh, nice. What's your high school?
Girls. Wyomissing area, Pennsylvania.
Okay. Gotcha.
Yeah.
Damn. All right. Because she's a Philly sports fan too, right?
Well, I guess now she's not.
Well, she'll
Travis.
Well, see, I mean, here's the thing. Travis's brother played for the Eagles. They don't really have a rivalry with the Eagles or any Phillies teams in Kansas City. So I think she's good, but
let's hope, because she did say that she was a Birds fan when I was at the show, and I'd like her to say a Birds fan. So we'll see. We'll have to ask her when she's on Sparkle.
That'll be
where her loyalty lies.
There you go. Perfect.
I also want to share the amazing gift you brought me.
Oh yeah, sure. Yeah.
Speaking of therapy and mental health, we're talking therapy is cool.
Therapy is cool. Yeah, for sure. I was designed by me with just one font. I threw it on shirts and just because I thought it would be cool for me to wear, and people ended up liking it. And so we're going to hopefully work on some other stuff coming up here soon. We just started partnering with the Happiness Project.
Yeah, I saw that.
They're incredible. Yeah, they have like 1 million followers on Instagram. They have some of the most amazing mental health apparel that goes back, the proceeds due to mental health and suicide prevention funds. And, you know, it was just, it was a group of high schoolers that lost their friend Nick to suicide. And, you know, as they got older in college, they started this brand, and it's grown into the biggest mental health apparel brand in the country. And it's so cool to see the work that they do. So yeah, like even simple messages like that, like people see a shirt like that, or that says feelings are temporary or something. Right. It might make them think about going and getting help. And so, yeah, no, it's, I hope you like it.
No, I love it. I love the message. I do think therapy is cool. I think everyone needs to go to therapy. And you know, it just be a cool kid, right?
Yeah. I mean, I think being weird is cool. So yeah, I'm in on that.
Oh, I am weird.
I don't know you that well, but we'll figure it out.
Trust me.
Unless, I'm the same, so it's okay.
When we go over to Neuhaus for lunch after this, you'll know that I'm crazy. They call me. I got promoted to governor last night. I was the mayor of Neuhaus, and now I'm the governor.
Does that mean that you go there so much?
It's
you
because I run the show there.
Oh, okay. That was me in Cincinnati. I was called the mayor of the banks, which is not...
Woo!
It's not as prestigious. It's because I was a raging alcoholic and spent thousands of dollars there, but...
Yeah,
I had a title, right?
I've had some rough nights in the banks.
Yeah, good times, though.
God bless Cincinnati.
Yeah.
All right. Well, thank you so much for being on the show, Brandon. I'm honestly so excited to watch your Sparkle journey because it's making a splash.
Thank you so much. This has been great. And thanks for creating a safe space for people to tell their story too.
Yeah, thank you. Sparkle on.